This is Focus West Michigan for Wednesday, January 14, 2026. I'm Joe Bilecki with your local news. Students gathered Tuesday on Grand Valley State University's Allendale campus, demanding it designate itself as a sanctuary campus. They demand policies protecting the school's community from actions enforced by federal immigration officers. WGVU's Dee Morrison reports.
We want a proactive policy that protects international students, that protects immigrants before something bad happens.
Owen Frisetto is with the GVSU Progressive Student Union, gathering outside Zumberg Hall on the Allendale campus. The group of about 20 protested recent ICE actions in Minneapolis. It's seeking student support to encourage university leaders to enact sanctuary campus policies.
No GVSU facilities, information, funds, personnel of any kind will be used to assist federal immigration enforcement activities from whether it be ICE or DHS.
Frisetto acknowledges there has been little immigration enforcement activity at GVSU outside of student visas revoked, then reinstated last year. But the group wants clarity.
We want specifically in the rules for the Grand Valley Police Department, the GVPD, that they have a ban on any cooperation with ICE if they were to come here and basically ask them for assistance.
A university spokesperson released a response stating, GVSU is committed to safeguarding the rights to free speech and assembly on our campuses. Students engaging in expressive activity on our campus today are part of a long history of GVSU students passionately and peacefully advocating for causes they believe in. I'm Dee Morrison.
The West Michigan Sports Commission reports youth and amateur sports tourism generated tens of millions of dollars in economic impact last year. WGVU's David Limbaugh tells us how.
We're in our 19th year of promoting this destination as an economic engine through sports tourism, and it's grown every year.
President of the West Michigan Sports Commission, Mike Gusweiler, says the nonprofit helped generate $85.3 million for the region in 2025, hosting 105 events. Sporting event visitors requiring overnight stays drive hotel and restaurant spending that also benefit retail and service industries. The Meyer State Games also finished strong with a 17.1% year-over-year increase in economic impact.
Typically, we're seeing families travel in the summertime, you know, when kids are out of school, and it's just a great destination to come to.
WMSC is expanding the Meyer Sports Complex near Rockford this spring, with 20 weekend travel tournaments scheduled in 2026. It also hosts the second annual Hartford Nationals in July, the largest U.S. sports competition for youth and adults with disabilities.
You know, we're excited to build on what we did in hosting them last year. I think we hit record numbers.
The WMSC will also bid on Amway Stadium events when it opens in 2027. You can read the full report online at WMSC's website. I'm David Limbaugh.
Anti-abortion protesters say the new Grand Rapids noise ordinance that prohibits amplified sound around medical clinics violates their right to free speech, but WGVU's Phil Dawson reports supporters say it protects patients and restores peace and quiet.
That violates the law of God.
During public comment, Josh and others told the city commission they oppose the new noise ordinance around healthcare clinics for religious reasons.
God has said you shall not murder. The facility this ordinance is designed to protect is committing mass murder by abortion.
But commissioners approved the ordinance prohibiting the use of microphones and amplified sound within 100 feet of a healthcare clinic. Interim city attorney Phil Strom says amplified sound is not protected speech.
There's no constitutional right to use amplified sound.
But Commissioner Kelsey Perdue is concerned the ordinance could suppress amplified protests on other issues throughout the city.
How much of downtown will be excluded if we go through with this ordinance? We have health facilities everywhere. It's 100 feet from each building, each property line. That can get really, really confusing for protesters.
Mayor David LeGrand thinks the limits on amplified sound won't restrict free speech and will answer complaints about noise.
I am convinced that this is something which will address concerns about rights to peace and quiet around those healthcare facilities.
I'm Phil Dawson.
We continue our National Human Trafficking Prevention Month coverage. Today, WGVU's Dee Morrison speaks with a survivor about her experience.
I was trafficked in South Florida from age 18 to 23, not knowing what a human trafficking trafficking victim was.
10 years later, Katie Green, now a West Michigan social worker, was learning about human trafficking in a continuing education class.
And I literally fell out of my seat saying, oh my gosh, this is what happened to me.
Green says it can be a subtle process. In her case, starting with a friendship.
Somebody who is telling you that you're beautiful and let me buy you things. And then the coercion starts and the manipulation, the threats like, I will kill you, I will kill your family, I will go to the news about what you're doing.
Green says human trafficking doesn't always involve transporting a victim. Many are coerced online.
It can also happen in our own home. The exploitation, especially among youth and vulnerable adults, happens right on our own computers. And it is so lucrative.
Green's advice to anyone trying to leave a trafficking situation is to be open to help despite the fear of reaching out. The National Trafficking Hotline connects victims to local agencies for help. I'm Dee Morrison.
Allegiant Airlines is purchasing Sun Country Airlines in a $1.5 billion deal. WGVU's David Limbaugh has the details.
The two airlines announced the deal Sunday, with Sun Country shareholders receiving $4.10 per share of Allegiant stock for each Sun Country share. Combined, the two low-airfare airlines provide 22 million passengers with service to nearly 175 cities. Minnesota-based Sun Country launched service from Gerald R. Ford International Airport in 2024, with seasonal direct flights to Minneapolis. Currently, Las Vegas-based Allegiant offers 18 direct flights from Grand Rapids. The two companies said they will work closely with employees and their unions to ensure a smooth and transparent integration process, with existing collective bargaining agreements remaining in effect. Allegiant expects the merger will expand its limited international service to 18 destinations. In a release, Allegiant CEO Gregory C. Anderson stated, quote, "We have long admired Sun Country for their well-run, flexible, and diversified business model that optimizes for year-round utilization and strong margins," end quote. The deal is expected to be finalized in the second half of 2026. I'm David Limbaugh.
Coming up soon, another one of StoryCorps' One Small Step conversations, but first, news from around the state. A Michigan Court of Claims judge set a Friday hearing on whether to block an official opinion that restored $645 million in grants for projects that were abruptly cut by a GOP-controlled state House committee. We have more from Rick Pluta.
Michigan House Republicans are challenging a formal opinion from Attorney General Dana Nassel. The Democratic Attorney General cleared spending in the current budget for prenatal and newborn programs, museums and symphonies, and Flint water crisis recovery, among other things. The Attorney General's binding opinion says the GOP-led House Appropriations Committee could not unilaterally make those budget cuts without getting approval from the entire legislature and Governor Gretchen Whitmer. Republicans say Nassel's opinion misreads the state constitution and is politically motivated. They want a 14-day court order blocking the Whitmer administration from spending that money while the case plays out. I'm Rick Pluta.
Michigan's public universities are promoting their new report detailing the economic impact they say they've had on the state's economy. Colin Jackson has more.
$45 billion. That's roughly the net new economic impact the Michigan Association of State Universities report says its member schools have had on the state. It accounts for university jobs, projects they funded, and the money their students and alumni spend and earn. Michigan State University President Kevin Guskowitz says the data helps correct misinformation and negative narratives around higher learning.
It is about the how so much of what we do improves quality of life, across the various sectors, and there's great data to support that. We have to tell our stories better.
Undergraduate enrollment in Michigan's colleges and universities is still down from the 2019-2020 school year. I'm Colin Jackson.
President Donald Trump is defending his tariff policies, saying they have revived Michigan's auto industry. In a speech he gave to business leaders at the Detroit Economic Club on Tuesday, Trump said it's tariffs that are making money for Michigan.
U.S. auto factories are now seeing more than $70 billion of new investment. Think of that. They were leaving. They were all going. They were going in the opposite direction. Now they're pouring back. It's the greatest. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. And much of that money is coming right here to the car-making capital of the world, Detroit.
Ford says it's pivoting away from electric vehicles after losing billions of dollars on that push. Meanwhile, General Motors has recently done better than Wall Street expected. Outside the Motor City Casino, where Trump was speaking, protesters gathered to oppose the president. The demonstration was not violent, but at least two people were arrested for blocking a sidewalk. Focus West Michigan is brought to you by listeners like you. To support this show and everything we do here, visit WGVUnews.org and click the donate button. And for a weekly dose of news right to your inbox, sign up for the WGVU newsletter. Today in our One Small Step conversation, we bring together two strangers for a conversation about their lives, not politics. Despite their different backgrounds, Karen and Jeff discover a profound commonality in their personal evolutions. From religious tolerance to cultural exposure, they conclude it's important to cultivate empathy and open-mindedness.
Hi, my name is Jeff. I am 58 years old. I am from Plainwell, Michigan.
Hi, my name is Karen. I am 68 years old. I am from Spring Lake.
I grew up in Georgia, and people tell me I still have a somewhat of a Southern accent.
You do, so actually.
I will own that. I moved away in 1984. I grew up in a lower middle class family. My dad was a truck driver. My stepmother worked at a Piggly Wiggly, same job, my first real job. Nobody in my family ever went to college, and I was not ready to do that either. So I'm like, how do I get out of the trailer park that I'm living in? So I did what a lot of young people do, is I went off to join the military. I ultimately wound up enlisting for 6 years right off the bat. Been all over the world. The last 3 years, I found myself up at Great Lakes, Illinois. The naval base is just north of the city of Chicago. That's where I met my wife, had a little girl, and this is 30 years ago now. I had 9 years active duty as an enlisted sailor, and I'm like, I can't do this anymore because I have a young family. And ultimately, I put myself through college. In 1997, I landed a teaching job at Joliet Junior College. It's the historical first junior college in the nation. I had an administrative job there. I retired as faculty after 27 years this summer.
I grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I've only moved about 30 miles west. I'm nestled right up against Lake Michigan, and you'll have to pry me out with a crowbar to get me any further away from the lake now. But I lived in a fishbowl because I lived within the very small confines of a Dutch Christian Reformed church community. Mm. So we went to church not once, but twice on Sunday, and we had catechism and we had Christian schools. And then I went off to the flagship Christian college that the denomination supports with its ministry shares.
And for me, I was christened in a Methodist church as a baby. My dad got custody of me when I was 2 years old. My sister was 9 at the time, but he and my stepmother would make me go to church with relatives. He didn't go. She didn't go, but they sent me to church, and it was Southern Baptist Church. I met a young lady when I was in the Navy. She and her family were Catholic. And I'm like, well, this sounds cool. So I went through full-blown catechism classes.
Wow.
The whole thing, got confirmed as a young man, 21 years old, and really enjoyed the ceremony of it all.
Mm-hmm.
But then I met my current wife, and that's where the Buddhism came in. I practiced pretty firmly for, I don't know, a dozen years or so. Fortunately, my wife is supportive. She's like, you know, I can't make you believe something, I guess. So for me, I don't know what's right. I don't know what the truth is, and I'm not comfortable telling someone they're not right about their religion. If I were to say that my faith is correct, by definition, the others have to be incorrect, and I can't go there.
Mm-hmm. I met my first husband while a student at Calvin, and he was from Ontario. We got married. We went back to his hometown of Chatham, Ontario. And again, we just started going down the same path that each of our respective families had raised us in. You know, remember, this is the Christian Reformed Church, baptized our kids. When they got older, they were going to go to Christian school. And then something happened, and that was that the economy tanked in Southwest Michigan. This was in the early 80s. He and his father were doing construction work that dried up. So he decided to go back to Calvin and finish a degree that would have allowed him as well to become a teacher. So we come back, two small children. I get pregnant with the third. He was going to go back and teach in Ontario, and I'm like 8 and 3 weeks pregnant, and I look at him and I said, we are not moving right now. So what we did instead is have him start substitute teaching in the Grand Rapids school system, and then the rest is history. He became a teacher in the Grand Rapids public school system. My whole point of that is that along the way, because the marriage fractured and we divorced, I had my first true excursions, if you will, out of that bubble. I stayed in the Christian Reformed Church until it became an unworkable situation because they were going through a very tumultuous time regarding the role of women in the church. And at that point, as a single woman, after a not very happy marriage where a lot of that patriarchy had been present, I went, there's got to be a more abundant way of living as a woman, whether I'm partnered or not partnered, that recognizes myself as an individual with equal rights and gifts. So I left the Christian Reformed Church, but now I am a member of the Episcopal Church. And the Episcopal Church has a very liberal element to it. And so that also encouraged some of that movement I was making more leftward. My second husband is not a Christian. He's like you, an agnostic more or less, and that doesn't grieve me at all.
You evolved in your faith, but then your second husband's like, yeah, that's just not my thing. But the two of you are cool with it, which is the same thing with my wife and I. We're like, just like, I won't even say agree to disagree because it's not even that, right? This is what you do and it helps you become a better person.
Exactly.
This is how I approach life. And I would like to think that it makes me a better person.
The Navy experience. You said you went all over the world. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, I was in the Navy from 1984 to 1993. Mm-hmm. I had never been on a plane before until I went to boot camp, you know. My family didn't do a lot of traveling. If we did, we go to a beach in South Carolina. So you drive there 5 or 6 hours from Georgia. Mm-hmm. When I was growing up, I never seen an Hispanic person in my life. Mm-hmm. Not in person or any other nationality, right? Mm-hmm. And so when I went off and joined the Navy, it was like, oh my gosh, because there's a lot of Filipinos in the Navy because of our relationship 30, 40 years ago. So I started to meet people that were different when I was stationed in Bahrain, which is a little island over in the Persian Gulf. Our ship was scheduled to leave the Gulf and go to Japan for some work in the shipyard. And on the way over, we stopped in the Philippines. Going there and going off the naval base and going out into Longapo City, it made me realize just how wealthy we are in this country because they didn't have running water. And this was 1988. You did your stuff and there was a trough and it went out to the river. It was just insane to me. And there was, it was a city, but it was just so far back in time, really super nice people, you know, the locals, that type of stuff made me realize when you travel, you get to meet people that don't look like you, don't think like you. I still have friends that I grew up with from high school that have not left the zip code. To me, there's nothing wrong with that either if you can be open-minded and meet other people.
During COVID, I just started doing extensive reading, and that's where I got really involved in these pro-democracy activities.
I'd like to know more about exactly what it is you're doing.
I'm trying to make sure that the democracy of this nation, as it's gone through all its many evolutions, continues in a forward motion so that the promise of what America is as a democracy, which if we're successful in realizing its promise, will be the world's first multicultural, multi-religious, multi-ethnic, egalitarian, pluralistic society. That's a real strong vision for me because it mirrors what I believe the call of Jesus on my life is, which is the call of the blessedness of all nations, of all people, that I care and can't thrive, whether I'm a Christian, agnostic, Buddhist, or Catholic, unless all my neighbors thrive. And so to the extent that I can help create a more equitable future for more people, the happier I am. So that's why when I talk with people about my pro-democracy advocacy work, if I'm able, I bring my faith into it. But for the most part, it's basically one and the same. It just, I don't need to talk about it in a faith perspective because they mean kind of the same thing to me.
Right. And I would think people see it in your actions and the way you speak.
One hopes, right?
But
we've really become beset by a lot of issues in my own community is that I'm not living very far away from that Dutch Christian Reformed Church nucleus. Mm. And so there's a lot of that really rigid way of thinking about what is Christian, what is not, what is right, what is wrong, that is now cropping up in political ways in my community. And it's really creating harm for some of the more marginalized communities. Sometimes when I'm trying to engage with someone and trying to find common ground, I just start with at least common language that is faith related because that seems to resonate with them. But I'm finding that those conversations don't go very far before mm-hmm. our different interpretations of the way we live out our faith become right. more of a logjam than they do an opening. And that's been very painful for me to realize. If I'm having a very difficult conversation and it feels like it didn't go anywhere, I tried to give myself that picture of, but seeds were planted in both of us. The seed planting is what gives me hope for the future.
Wow. We both seem to be people that are not hung up on being right. I'm willing to take in new information and change. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I was a decent person at 18, but I'm not that same person. But I have people that I have conversations with that they're proud that they haven't changed over the last 30 years. They're the same person they were. And I'm like, I'm not sure about that. Mm-hmm. How can you live and not evolve?
To me, it would be a very death-dealing existence not to be able to embrace change and be excited about what you could learn tomorrow that you never thought about before. I literally wake up in the morning expecting to learn something new. I mean, if I don't, I feel a little disappointed. It doesn't have to be a big thing, just a small right. insight, anything. Those are the days that I really celebrate.
This has been Focus West Michigan from WGVU for Wednesday, January 14, 2026. I'm Joe Bilecki. Our audio operations manager is Rick Bierling, and our news and public affairs director is Patrick Center. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll be back with more news and events in West Michigan tomorrow. Thanks for listening.